So one thing we've been kind of avoiding that I wanted to bring up was drugs.
Yes.
Wait, what?
Drugs.
Oh.
Because I like chemistry, so I mean, even the drugs that we don't consider drugs, like caffeine, alcohol, whatever you're taking in the morning, your pills in the morning, how are those going to be affecting you overall? I didn't know research for this, so I just wanted to bring up pose the question. Where do you think that, like, I mean, caffeine intake for our society is humongous, and it's a really addictive substance. This is my second cup of coffee today. Where do you think it's going with our ability to, think?
I saw some interesting statistics on that this recently, and again, I don't remember the exact numbers, so bear with me on the general picture. But they were involving the percentages of business travelers across time zones who are using a particular drug in order to regulate and to adjust, and the percentage of scientists. Not just the percentage of students at school, but the percentage of professional scientists who are using drugs to enhance their attention and focus. It's not 50%, but it's close. And there was a big discussion going on about it, saying, is this ethical, is this not? And a lot of very strong opinions on both sides of it, from people saying, I'm choosing to use this to modify my and increase my ability to achieve task X. And others saying, what I discovered and what I wasn't expecting is that it's difficult to argue with that perspective. Because the arguments against it were tending to come from moral grounds, not ethical grounds.
Oh, yeah. And people who argue for moral grounds are never going to change their mind.
It's kind of the same concept. Like, the Olympics discharges anyone if they're using any sort of drug.
Right.
Doesn't matter. Well, illicit drug. But, I mean, there's still that whole concept of human performance, whether or not they're actually... I mean, do you want to enhance... How is the performance enhancing? If you're going to go do a task, why not do the task? Why not have your performance enhanced to do the task at hand?
I think this is actually pretty relevant for some transhumanist discussion.
Oh yeah, totally.
I mean, like in more than just and this is another way we're changing our brains, because right now we're using technologies that we have no idea how 10 years from now are going to change
exactly.
Our brains.
Yeah, I mean, you can go that way, but yeah.
And 10 years ago we were doing the same thing with, you know, God knows everything. I think every second grader who walked in and didn't want to listen to school, you know,
We're always
kind of the ethics of making improvements when you don't know what's going
to
happen.
It's what we're supposed to have the Federal Drug Administration for, but they don't do a very good job.
That's where this comes in.
Yeah. Yay, graph.
Because if you're talking about something like a nuclear power plant, we just had this discussion last Friday, didn't we? If you're talking about something like a nuclear power plant, that's very easy to regulate on a federal level. Something ubiquitous and cheap is much more difficult to regulate.
Like biodiesel.
Or performance-enhancing drugs.
Oh,
yeah.
So to get into actually using... I used some smart drugs for a little while. I need to go out and buy more. I definitely felt a difference. The main thing for me was I have audio processing issues. It's tied into my dyslexia, where I have difficulty processing language in different formats. And so when a lot of people are talking in a group, I can't pull out one thing. If someone is talking to me in a bar, I just kind of smile and nod because I can't process it. But when I was taking this stuff, I could actually pull that out. I could have a conversation with someone in a crowded room. And I was able to keep my focus longer, and I felt calmer about my abilities and stuff like that. No real detriment. I didn't notice anything wrong. I still didn't remember to take it every morning. But always been kind of bad about that, but so I think that there are, did we talk about in biology versus mechanics?
We did hint at nootropics a little bit, but didn't go very, I think it was towards the end of the conversation, so we didn't go very far into it.
Yeah. Well, I think a good example from drug use, though, is, at least as far as I know, people who have done a lot of LSD, mm-hmm. stuff like that, while they might have more difficulty having children, I don't think it actually affects their brain, like their kids' brains. So as far as passing things on, that person might be permanently changed. Yeah.
Do you mind if I share a little bit of the conversation we were having last night about drugs affecting the brain?
Sure. Okay. I don't actually
remember
what we talked about, so I'm
going
to say yes to it.
I guess. I was talking last night about my experience taking for several years Paxil, an SSRI. And one of the things that came out of that discussion was talking about how I very intentionally rewired how I react to some very specific triggers while I was on it, because it gave me the clarity to notice those triggers.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got off, there was a period where I really, the third time I got off, that stuff is hard to kick. The third time I got off, it was really starting to recognize, I'm triggering this. I can stop this feedback loop here. But what I didn't really connect until last night was that there's other stuff, other rewiring or reprogramming that, at least experientially, it feels like occurred, where it's only been in the last couple of years, and I've been off since 2002, it's only been the last couple of years that I've started to rebuild some of the emotional connections that were very, very easy to do beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the drug has been out of my system for a long, long time, but it still created habits of thinking that I wasn't even aware of.
Mm-hmm.
As well as the ones I was. So when you talk about long-term consequences, or you talk about how do nootropics affect the brain, again, I'm not speaking from a position of having done an in-depth scientific study, but I think it's at least worth considering that there may well be effects that you experienced and aren't aware of, just in how you've learned to direct your attention.
But I think that happens with anything we do. I mean, eating food will make you happier. That's why you get food at meetings that you don't want to go to. You're like, hey, a meeting! And you get in there and you're eating your donut. You're like, why did I come here? So I think that it's more directed with drugs, which is definitely worth talking about. I don't want to negate the point, but I think that we do it with everything, just maybe to a less directed degree.
I know. I was kind of interested. Yesterday, I was reading an article about how blogging affects dopaminergic reward pathways.
Really?
Yes. Seriously, it's actually addictive. It was awesome. I mean, okay, learning affects reward pathways. We're talking about those, so it's not like, oh, it's a crazy new drug we found and people are writing, but, you know. But they were saying that, you know, especially with repeated use, quote unquote, I don't know if I should use that word in writing, but that it's a stronger reward mechanism, and so there's definitely a fix. And while I can't say much positive about doing things automatically for your little reward, be it cheese or, you know, dopamine, I do think it's neat that we have systems out there that are making learning and participating rewarding.
I think it's, yeah. That's,
like a drug is.
And creating.
Yeah.
And creating, yeah, that's a good one.
Because those are all really addictive things that have been kind of undervalued.
Well, yeah, that kind of goes in the concept that our brains are really wired for language. Like, ridiculously wired to use language and be rewarded with language if you're using language right. If you say something awesome, you say, oh, hey, I'm awesome. And like, yeah. So, I mean, it's not too much of a surprise that people are, that they're just now figuring out that having everyone sit down and write their thoughts out. I mean, everyone said keeping a journal is a good thing or something along those lines. The same kind of idea, but that there's a good reward system built into our brain for something as simple as writing down your thoughts of the day or whatever, what you have for breakfast.
I've always been really divided over drug use and altering your brain and how if there are other ways to get that same effect. And what cheating is and what that sort of stuff. And I've done a fair amount of drug use in the past, and I enjoy recreating that experience through a medium that I can actually remember later, and also that connects to all of my experience instead of I was off in La La Land and then I discovered this thing about myself, but then when you come back it's difficult to relate that to your yeah. everyday experience. So
what
it's
drug
not
are you
describing? Hallucinogens. Yes.
Which hallucinogens?
mostly mushrooms, but I mean, even just talking about, you do MDMA and you feel this great connection to everything around you, and then you come back to everyday life and you're like, nothing is connected because it's not at the same level. And you
well,
know.
Yeah, you're talking about state
exactly.
dependence, right?
Huh?
You're talking about state dependence, right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So if you learn something during when you're really sad, you're not going to remember it to that same degree unless you're sad again, and that's why when you get really pissed off, you start remembering all the other times that you're really pissed off, and you have this, you know, spiraling of argument sort of thing, you know.
Things like how you file these things, and how you refer to them in your brain. When I was doing hallucinogenics, it did not change that aspect of my mind whatsoever. It just, I felt different, and I was, my consciousness was different, and I understand the shared experience you're talking about, but it did not change my organization of thought, and I remembered everything later.
Yeah, I mean, I mean,
literally everything.
Yeah,
I mean, as much as I would remember if I had not taken hallucinogenics, the capacity of my memory during a period of time was undiminished.
Right. I would remember everything as well, but because it was in a different state, it would not have the same meaning that it did at that time.
Well, that's interpretive. Could you induce or control hallucinations with your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as lucid dreaming.
Could you? Some people can't control that. They shouldn't be doing hallucinogenic
right.
drugs.
Right.
You know, and I don't recommend it to those people. Go ahead.
Was it less accessible on the visceral level?
Right. So what I'm saying is that when I want to have a completely alien experience now, instead of tripping, I find some random search term through whatever random search engine, and I do a bunch of research on it, and then, or, you know, go out and get lost in woods that I don't know and try to look for something that I wouldn't look for otherwise, or just try to be open to other things happening. And
well, did the hallucinogenic drugs change your approach without the hallucinogenic drugs? Was what, you know, basically, do you approach these things differently now than post hallucinogenic drug user as opposed to pre hallucinogenic drug user?
I don't know.
Probably. I mean, but that's something that I see, and everybody who used a great deal of hallucinogenic drugs, they are definitely changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't consider that a negative or a positive or, you know,
right.
it's a fact. And I can basically tell, and I'm sure you can as well, tell the difference between people that have used hallucinogenic drugs and haven't when you encounter them.
But we can recreate experiences other than drug use, where we're still altering our brains, but in a different way, is kind of what I'm getting at.
And also, our brains are kind of a pharmacopoeia, I mean.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's what
I think.
Correct.
Yeah.
The thing about state dependence for me is you can remember what you felt and you can remember what you experienced, and but it's more like referring to it like, oh, I remember that I had these thoughts and I remember that I had these realizations, but you, like you said, on a visceral level, it's not as accessible. Like, we don't just have to talk about, you know, using drugs to trigger chemicals when you're talking about, you know, how our brains are their own pharmacopoeia. If you're having a certain really intense emotional experience at, like, sex or any type of radical connectivity or, like, extreme physical exertion, the kinds of things that you're experiencing in that state can't be extrapolated to another state. You can't replicate it without the same sort of chemical influence. So I think you can retain information in some ways, but I know, I mean, from my own experience of using drugs, like having an experience smoking pot and having, you know, sitting quietly on a beach and having these incredible realizations, and then it's, but it kind of is dependent on the state, because I can remember everything that seemed so rational, and it still seems really rational.
The sun was beautiful.
And yeah, no, that has nothing to do with it, but like, well, I mean, realizations about, you know, life and everything that still seem very cogent and very as useful, but they're not as, they're not felt as deeply as they were in the original state in which they're discovered. And I think it can be sort of the same with connections with people and your connection to any type of knowledge. So I don't know exactly where I was going with that, but it's an interesting state dependence is very interesting to me.
Yeah.
And the idea of how, like, the tropics would change the way we learn, and if certain things were assimilated with certain chemical inputs being correlated with that, how would they be accessible in the same way later?
So going into state dependence, do you think being online is a state of... So when you're looking at the Wikipedia article and then you're going over to your next tab and you're finishing your blog entry with some of the knowledge that you've just gained, and then the next time you're writing in your blog, you can reference the Wikipedia article again without necessarily looking it up because you remember parts of it. Are you going to remember the same stuff when you're walking around on the street?
Well,
I think you do, but I just want
to. Yeah, but I do think there's a lot of state dependency going on there, and that depending on what you do when you're looking at the Wikipedia, the way that, of course, that information will be remembered will be different. So I think there's state dependency, but it's not, you're not going to get any of the information that you read when you're not at the computer. But I think your conceptual process and the creative part of that will be working differently. Like, if you're walking down the street, you're trying to think of what you remember rather than if you're at your computer. But upon the whole idea of state dependency, that seems to be, to me, to be a fundamental issue of transhumanism, is that the idea of inducing the states you want with or without lots of effort or time, like, I mean, being able to say, make yourself happy just by pressing a button or something. I know that's really a crude example, but it's, to me, that sort of seems like the basis of what transhumanism is sort of pointing at, is this ability to know what you want and get it simply by knowing what it is without having to experience it. Or, I don't know, I mean, I look at any type of modification for the body, like superior muscle ability or some type of something like that. You're putting that into you, and it's like you know what it is, and then you get it. And I see so much of that in the type of ideas behind transhumanism, is that knowing what something is without experiencing it, you can sort of then experience it if you know it well enough.
But what about surprise and delight and empathy?
Because you might be able to know what something is, but if you haven't experienced it, then you miss out on...
I guess what I mean is that there are... I absolutely agree with you for a given number of emotions, like sadness and happiness and fear and anger, and that sort of peaceful neutrality when watching certain movies, you know. But there are other things, like, that can't be accessed just by knowing what it is. For example, delight. I can't manufacture it. I can't...
But maybe we will be able to at some point.
Maybe
like drugs, like,
okay,
like, so here's the coffee cup, and it's like, you're so delighted at these patterns, just like, these patterns are so amazing, but will we be able to hone that and I mean, that's what I wonder about.
I lied. You can manufacture empathy. It's called sitcoms. So, I mean,
But I think that's an important question for our whole society. Yeah.
To me, what it is about, and this goes to some drugs as well, is it's a shortcut. I will not use a drug or a shortcut of any kind unless I've figured out the hard way first. And if doing it the hard way is not an option at that time. So, to me, with the muscle mass thing, as an example, yeah, I could just have it done, well, not right now, but I'm sure in a number of years we'll have the equivalent of that. I want to know how to do that on my own first. And then because I can't maintain that, but it's become a tool that I use in order to operate in the world, I want to have it all the time. But I also want to have worked for it at some point. To me, that's the fair
balance. Think of all the things that you could then work towards if you had that.
Exactly. I mean,
why would you even need... Why do you need to work towards that when you can just get the scale and then all these other things that you can work towards are higher buildings? I don't know what it would be.
So work towards the muscle mass first, or the equivalent thereof, and then after you know what it's like to achieve that, it becomes yours.
Yeah.
It's a skill you can pull out of the bag, and then with that skill, you can learn how to climb buildings, and then after you've figured that out, it becomes a part of you.
I mean, I see what you're saying, although I just don't think it's very relevant in terms of
enhancements. It absolutely is, because without those actual experiences, without the having to work to do things, or going out and doing all that stuff, from one angle, you know, a lot of the emotions you're talking about, they're completely irrelevant without the personal experience. Yes, you can have manufactured empathy because of sitcoms. If you haven't experienced it yourself, what they're doing in that sitcom is completely meaningless. You don't get it.
Yeah.
It's only relevant because you've been there and you've done that.
But if you don't
have all of those experiences, you develop no sense of what is actually appropriate. You may know how to do something. You may be able to achieve it, should you.
Right, that's what I'm getting at is there's huge should yous that are raised by all of this thinking. And I think both in contemporary society and projected what will come. And I think these issues should be more important. And to me, the issue comes down to the ability to control the enlivening something that you know beforehand that you want. Like, you want to convict this person, so you send them through this trial to get them convicted, or something like that. I mean, it just seems to me something that we've always done. We understand a system, we understand how to control it, so then we press the correct buttons to get the desired effect. And I think we're getting to a point where we're going to be able to push a lot more buttons.
Well, I think the people, though, that are going to go for the happy button when they've done tests on rats of if you press a lever, you get food, if you press another level, you get a dopamine shot to the brain, will push the dopamine lever until they starve to death.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the people that are into that are just going to be happy, drooling idiots, and they won't be in the way of anyone else. Yeah.
I mean, and with all these ideas of the individual's sovereignty, why shouldn't they be able to do that? I mean, but what about production? What about using all these new abilities in terms of the group setting? I mean, you're enhancing not just for group or its individual benefits, but for a group benefit. And, I mean, right now it seems like if you're in the Olympics, you take steroids and work out real quick before you do your thing.
You could have... What drugs do you want to give the workers in the factories that will make, you know, better stuff for you? But there's a divide between what is the most beneficial and what is the most humanizing. I don't really want to use the word humanizing in a transhumanist discussion. Humanizing in a transhumanist way.
Yeah.
And just as a side note to that, I think it's worth asking if the situation you're talking about is a zero-sum one or not.
I'm not sure what you mean exactly.
Okay, let's look at the difference between athletes doping up and scientists doping up.
Okay.
Athletes doping up, one of them is going to win. And if they don't all do it, it's not fair. Scientists doping up, they're generally contributing to human knowledge, and it's not hurting the other scientists for one to be doing that.
Oh yeah, the range and difference between the effects is huge for different mods.
So, it depends who they're working for, also the scientists. It depends who they're working for, what aim, so that's relevant how it applies, what they're being used for. Yes, in the Third Reich there was a fierce competition. Those sick bastards developed a lot of great things, but at the expense of what? And also now they have new pharmaceutical companies, and these people are exploitative sick bastards that will do anything for the almighty dollar.
And we can all...
And they are in competition.
Yeah, the point I make is that I'm making isn't that science is always for the good of humanity.
Right.
The point is that is a general model. I think we have zero-sum situations and non-zero-sum situations, and it's important to be aware that there's a difference. That's all I'm trying to say.
Fairness is judged differently in competitive versus cooperative.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And in a non-zero-sum situation, like what we're talking about with, should we? I really like the idea of getting to it ourselves there first for ethical reasons, because there's a kind of natural ethics of experience that comes with knowing where things come from, which is kind of why I'm not a vegan, because I've fished.
Yeah.
But I don't know how I feel about carnivores who've never fished or know where meat comes from, that it's not from styrofoam trees.
Yeah.
And there's a similar ethics of experience that comes naturally from learning a new technology, or building a new system, or discovering how to do something. If you can see all of the levels, you don't necessarily... You can replace all those levels with a button,
knowing what went into it first.
This whole discussion makes me think of that Total Recall,
the
movie. And it's interesting because whenever that was thought of, they didn't think of the future as drugs and push a button. They had him go through the experiences, but they had the power of adding in the buttons to a certain extent. Like, what kind of female do you like? What does she look like? What are you looking for? Et cetera, et cetera. So if you have the experience, albeit virtual, that you're talking about, how we're so visually processed anyway, does the brain know the difference between a really realistic virtual experience versus actual real-life experience?
Yeah, there was actually one thing we talked about at the focus group last week, was what one sort of technology do you want to come out? And I said, I want people to be able to have an experience totally alien to their own, so people can empathize with someone who is starving and afraid for their life every single day. So when you're worried about the printer printing correctly, it doesn't seem like quite such a big deal, and you're also more likely to make decisions that will help someone in that situation. And I think that it kind of gets hazy around the idea of physical ability, because you can synthesize being able to do something physically, or, you know, travel abroad or whatever, theoretically in the future, but it's not the same as going through hours of training and actually doing it. And maybe someday it will be. And then maybe it'll be different, and then I'll be okay with it, but...
Well, aren't there those studies where they have people just pretend to make three free throw shots, you know, over and over and over and over again mentally, in the control group, and then the actual group is in it, and in some instances, the people who've envisioned it, I don't want to misquote anything here, but you're nodding, so I mean, it's like unbelievable.
Yeah.
Or target shoot, you know, mentally, over and over and over again. This is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to do, this one, you know, over and over. And then they outperform the actual people who've been trying it.
But those aren't necessarily the actual people, because they are in a very real way practicing.
Oh, yes. But maybe without having you match the gun first, then I guess that's the difference.
Yeah.
And if they can outperform the people who actually have the actual gun in their hands.
That's exactly what that would do, is it would be a way of the emotional equivalent of mentally shooting hoops for hours. You're not being those people having those other experiences, but
that's more about skill level and empathy.
That's awesome.
I was thinking about, we're talking about enhancement for enhancement's sake, and the idea that if you want to be able to run really fast or build really big strong muscles, do it on your own first, have the natural experience, and then you know you can do it so you can ride a shortcut. For people who can't have those experiences naturally, so if we're talking about now a therapeutic application for those sorts of things, is it, and if you have people who can achieve it naturally and they work for it to know they can do it and then they get the shortcut versus people who just need it therapeutically, do the people who need it for therapy just get the shortcut, or should they have to go through a virtual reality program to simulate?
I think for that you would be providing someone with therapy that would bring them up to par, which is what therapy is. And then if they want to run really fast, they have to work from that similar starting point.
Do you think
always in flux?
Right.
It's okay.
Okay, because I'm thinking about a time when these technologies are widely available and we'll all have gene therapy to do these enhancements theoretically. And I just wonder, because I guess you just answered that the PAR would be different, and it may be that the standard for human performance is much higher than it is now, so people will just go there automatically.
Yeah.
But that's
history has shown that the standard for human performance does keep increasing over time. I talked to people 50 years ago, and the idea of running a 3.5 minute mile was absurd, and now it's commonplace.
We have more time to spend on our fitness.
Too. Well,
better,
I mean, better techniques, better shoes, better nutrition, all of
them. They're also drawing from certain ethnic groups. And you're talking about things like basketball. There's Russians, there's blacks, and it's overwhelmingly, they're drawing deliberately from those ethnic groups. So they're already doing that naturally.
Yeah, push the buttons you want. And I don't know. I mean, the World Transhumanist agenda is the ethical use of the technologies that shall come or are in the labs right now. I know some of them are, but I'm just thinking out loud. So,
yeah, ethics are something that are very socially constructed, but they're also logical, so.
Why should we need to train? If the modification is giving you a capacity that's different than anything you could experience before you have the modification, then what? There's like a fuzziness between the skills that you've learned that are somewhat similar to that and having that empathy for what's going to be enhanced and the actual functions that or capacities that the mod will give you.
If you're given the body of a marathon runner, that doesn't mean that you can go out and start to run a marathon the next day.
True. I agree.
Because, well, you may have all of the physical tools, you don't have the knowledge of how to use
you
them.
You don't have the experience.
Yes.
You don't have the wisdom. You don't know, here's when I need to be getting fluid into my system now. You
right.
don't have
right.
the, I need to set the pace.
Yeah, right.
You know, here's when I need to start to speed up, whatever.
Well, what about
learning?
What
do I do when all I'm doing is jogging for 3.5 hours? Not doing anything else. I would get bored.
Yeah.
What if you're learning with your mod? I mean, it's not like you get your mod and then, for example, you get your mod, and then you go out and do all these things. What if you're learning, you get that, it's a new thing for you. It's like you get your cell phone, like when cell phones are first out, or the cell phones with the screens that could do the internet and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're learning how to use this new capacity.
Yeah.
And I do agree that having similar skills beforehand will allow you to train yourself faster and to maybe learn more subtle details of what you're doing. And thus you could have two people modded with the same things where they each could perform differently.
Yeah.
And that's just raising bar competition. But I'm not certain what it is you're actually saying in terms of, is there a type of necessity or is it just like a moral or your opinion? Because I know Natasha Vetemore, if any of you are familiar with her. She's, what's his name?
Max Moore,
which is one of the, some head guy in the OTA. He did a lot of work in his graduate and undergraduate and now on transhumanist issues, and he helps start the thing. But she is totally into training the body along lines where transhumanism will bring it, like being very conscious of what's already going on rather than just ignoring it and waiting for something to come, like very conscious of her nutrition, and she's all obsessed with the body being like skilled and that type of stuff.
This is something, you know, Ray Kurzweil, the whole diet, focus on diet and nutrition and like prepare.
Right.
You know, longevity is important and we need to
Well, that brings in the idea of, I remember there being a conversation with, and I hope this helps to some degree, this girl that was she was really into the idea of uploading, and she was a cutter. She was like, I will not be in this body any longer, it does not matter. I dislike this body, and she was self-mutilating. And it finally got to the point where in the group it was like, it doesn't matter what body you're in if you're going to dislike it. It doesn't matter if you upload, you're just looking for something different. People who are unhappy no matter where they are, they just think, well, if I move back to this place that I was so happy in,
exactly.
I'll be happy. No, you are miserable there too. You're just remembering the good parts. You have to be comfortable in what you're doing in order to.
In other words, it has to be internal. But, you know.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of uploading as a transhumanist version of Pulling a Geographic. That's nice.
Yeah, and so with having to experience it first, that's. To me, that's incorporating it into your psyche, which you cannot. At least I assume you can't do if you're just handed something. It's like. The people who, their parents send them through college, they never know how money works. They're just handed this education and a silver spoon, and then they're let out into the real world, and they have all this knowledge and all these credentials that are supposed to prepare them for the world, and they have no idea what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't incorporated the actual system.
Well, I do agree that training for your mod or training with your mod will inevitably give you better ability to use it.
And I'm sure there will be people that don't do that.
And, I mean, and then you think about a different type of mod, like a brain interface, some type of thing like that. I mean, like, can you pre-train yourself for that? Or, I mean, train yourself for that?
I'd like to respond to that in a really out of left field way. Does discussion of, and I apologize for throwing this out there, does discussion of the soul have any relevance to what we're talking about?
I think it does.
Because that's kind of the great unspoken, because it's not scientific, it's not empirical, it's not observable, but what we're talking, what we're going around in circles
yes.
over here is there a difference between actual personal experience and synthesis of experience? And that's a question of what it means to be human, and that's a question about the soul.
Yeah.
I actually have a really good answer to this.
Uh-oh.
Christopher Slater, which is funny, we called him Topher, was one of my very dear friends in Virginia. We had a conversation on the soul once. And this is his idea. I wish I had come up with it, but I didn't. He thinks the soul is the pattern in your brain that when you have a thought, it goes through a certain pathway of synapses. And then when you remember something that has to do with that, it goes along the same pattern of synapses, and it becomes easier and easier, and you kind of wear pathways in your brain. And even if you have identical twins with the exact same genetic makeup, if you have them go through incredibly or as identical experience as you possibly can, they will form different pathways in their brains. Just by chance, by, you know, if I have an equal chance of going left or right on an option, you know, 50% of the time I'm going to go left, 50% of the time I'm going to go right. And so just through that, the theory of constructing this, then the soul is reconstructible. You can find that program and transfer it.
Replicable, not necessarily reconstructible.
Right.
Sorry.
Right, no, it's good. And so I think that goes into really when we reconstruct an experience, or when we do virtual reality, this ties into when we're playing video games. If a person has the exact same skill as a computer opponent, we still treat them differently because we know one is a computer and one is a person. And that's why we think the computer opponent is always so hard.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we all usually think the computer component is so hard or easy. I'm thinking of StarCraft where I'm always like, God damn it, the computer's always going to win. But that's from a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
I just found humans are way better. Always.
Okay. You are expecting humans to be better.
Okay.
Same
thing.
And so even if they play in the exact same way, if you think you're playing a human, you're going to treat it as such and like it's going to be a difficult thing. And so if you're trying to recreate an experience, you're going to treat it differently if you know that it's virtual reality.
I know what you mean. With the computer game. Like, if you're playing in person and you know it, you'll plan way farther ahead than if you know it's a computer, then you know you don't have to go all the way out and plan for the unknown.
Right.
I mean, I'm just...
And when you're planning for the person that you're playing, you're not planning your own moves.
Mm-hmm.
Or you are, and then you overplan, and then they do something completely irrational, and you're like, damn it, I didn't think of that one!
But you're right, like if I'm playing chess on the computer, if it's against the computer,
uh-huh.
I feel like I'm at a disadvantage. Because if it's a person, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, like I feel like somehow I can, you know, skirt around them, but a computer is going to analyze everything I do times a bazillion, and there's no way I can, I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking more difficult to play the computer.
Yeah, so I think it's based on what style of game you're playing
mm-hmm.
as well.
Are you saying the computer doesn't follow the logic and the game has followed the logic?
I'm saying that's my perception
yeah.
when I'm playing,
right.
that I'm prejudiced against playing.
Right.
So I feel I'm at a disadvantage.
The computer has an objective field of logic, and it's all there
exactly.
all the time, and the human doesn't always perceive that.
We have to get out of here in about 10 minutes. So does anyone have any closing thoughts? That was awesome.
That it's very difficult for me personally not to privilege direct face-to-face human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what the task or the context is,
mm-hmm.
I'll leave it at that.
Do you think that with increased technological capacities that using those to enrich face-to-face human interaction is something worthy and...
What do you mean by enrich?
I'm not exactly sure. I guess I just mean
enrich our interaction.
Okay. if we can do something with our interaction, a practical thing, something
mm-hmm.
that's productive, enriching that productivity. So not necessarily efficiency, because there's many ways to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
If we have increased empathy, say through some
right.
magical ability, we have more of a handle on what the other person's feeling. Like we can sense at a deeper level exactly what's going on, and maybe an improved ability to understand and interpret facial cues or something.
I mean, do you think that... I mean, that's what technology is doing already, but do you think the group sphere is a good goal to look towards when we're creating novel technologies? Like, we're doing this so that we can enrich the group interaction.
I think it's absolutely necessary because we are incredibly prone towards masturbatory activities, and so if we don't state that something is explicitly to enhance the group, we will go home and have our own time, and then society goes
so
away.
Should modification be regulated in the most general sense, not regulated like in bad connotation, but in the most should there be oversight and modification, and will that oversight help steer it and develop it?
It won't matter if there is or not.
People are going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I think
human nature says it's going to happen one way or the other.
Yeah, and that we will regulate each other.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we won't regulate ourselves, we will regulate each other.
Yeah. And it
doesn't necessarily mean we'll regulate each other well, but we
right.
will
no.
regulate
yeah.
each other.
We never
have. A small thing that's been kind of nagging at me. It feels like we're very willing to stand on the shoulders of giants intellectually, and at the same time wanting to do it ourselves physically for that experience of learning. And I'm wondering, where do we draw the line between mental muscle and physical ability if so much of physical ability is drawn, like what you said, and drawn off of mental practice and of really knowing what you're doing.
I think that's a fantastic question.
Yeah.
I would take a whole other discussion group on that.
Pretty broad.
Yeah.
I feel like, what is cheating and why?
Yeah.
Does that sound like a good one? You guys want to do that next time?
Sure.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, cool. Let's do it.
With big time.